All right. Driving into Nutter County this morning. Seemed very quiet. Oshin, was everyone nursing sore heads or maybe still partying? Because St. Eunan's county champions.
There's probably, it's a case of both, Greg. There'll be a lot of sore heads. Maybe some boys are still partying and haven't actually given themselves any breathing room yet to get a sore head, if you know what I mean.
So it was success for St. Eunan's once again. The hopes of Dunlow dashed, but I don't know when it happens, but if you can take any pride in defeat or take positives from defeat, there's an awful lot for Dunlow to look at there because they put it up and stayed with St. Eunan's for much of that game yesterday.
We were very impressed by Dunlow. So we were. Congratulations to St. Eunan's. We'll talk about them in a second, but we'll have to mention Dunlow because a lot of the football people would have thought, you know what, this could be an easy enough day for St. Eunan's. They were the raging hot favourites. They felt that they got 3 or 4 points up early on in the game. It could be a long afternoon for Dunlow. That did not happen for Dunlow. They brought so much intensity and hunger into that game yesterday. They really put it up to St. Eunan's. And listen, they weren't far away. So they weren't. And they're a side that have come through the intermediate ranks in recent years, but they've got a lot of really good footballers, talented footballers. And they fully committed to their club and to their cause yesterday.
I mean,
and
things go their way. They could dominate men's, women's.
Oh, listen, they're not going to, as Gary McDade said yesterday, them boys, they're not going away anywhere. Mm. They've got a taste for it now. They know what it's like to be part of a senior county final. The first time, for the club itself to be there, for the first time in 60 years, they haven't won it in 64. And it was a fantastic occasion for everybody involved with that club, Dunlow, and for the Rosses area as well. Yeah. And a lot of connections down there. And listen, yesterday was a fantastic day for the championship because it felt like a champion. Once that game started, the atmosphere was right. The aggression that was brought in and the attitude towards playing the game was right yesterday from both sides.
And although it was low scoring early on, it was still entertaining.
It was still 4-4 at half time, right? Yeah. It was 4-4 at half time, but we were getting an entertaining game.
Yeah.
So we were, and Dunlow were bringing it to St. Eunan's. And at times during the match, St. Eunan's, you could say, probably struggled. And to me, St. Eunan's still, I don't think they've reached their peak yet in the club championship. They had a couple of good spells against Neve Connell in the first match where they were very good. And then the first half of their second game against Neve Connell, which was the quarter final. But I still believe that St. Eunan's haven't hit the ceiling.
I think there's more in them.
They're just, and at times yesterday, they struggled with what Dunlow brought to the game. But at the end of the day, there has to be a winner and a loser. Commiserations to Dunlow. They were fantastic on the day. And even though it's disappointing that you lose a final, they will take, when they sit down and reflect, they will take a lot away from it.
So break the game down for us then in terms of, you know, team dominance, the ebb and flowing of the game, how you read it.
It was very, very tight. Dunlow probably at half time should have been maybe 2 or 3 scores up.
Yeah.
They should have been ahead, but they weren't. It was 4-4. St. Eunan's got a lucky break with that goal in the second half. The ball came off the upright and Park Boyle gave it to Conor O'Donnell, junior Conor O'Donnell. He got the man of the match award. He ended up with 1-4.
Eunan's could have ran away.
They could have. You felt once they went 3 up, that goal went in. Right.
Yeah, that's it.
They're going to go here. But Dunlow, they dug deep. So they did. They dug deep. They got it back to a point and there was a phase after that where St. Eunan's couldn't get their hands on the ball. They couldn't get any momentum again. It was all done low and they got it back. They got it back to a point and then Eunan's then went 2 in front again. We had the controversial penalty call by the referee, Ryan Walsh. It was his first county final. That was huge, Greg. We couldn't believe it. You are entering injury time here and a penalty is called for something that probably happens every single day in a football match. Now, when I looked at it first, when I seen Ryan Walsh make his way up to call the penalty, there was a gesture that maybe there was stamping of feet. Now, that is the case. That's a card. That's a sending off. You're stamping on somebody, that's a sending off. But then there was another suggestion that there was a tug. Mm-hmm. Was it on Sean Patton? Sean Patton got a yellow card. Was that for the tug? Or was it for a stamp? Mm. Or was it for giving back chat to the referee?
Yeah,
this morning we still don't know. Yeah. But it was a call that amused everybody.
I know you say you see it every day, but in the dying stages of a very important county final, if it's cynical in any way at all, and I'm not suggesting it is, I'm just trying to put my mind in the referee, and it is seen as a last ditch sacrifice to ensure a victory, does that elevate it then to potentially the importance of a penalty, or should that even be factored in?
what was going through my mind at the time was are St Union's going to be hard done by again, because there was a county final a couple of years ago against Glenties where there was a call made and it was a wrong call, and I was thinking, is this going to be another situation for St Union's, and this will not go down well if Dunlow are to win this game. But St Union's responded. There was, what, 5 minutes added on. There was 4 minutes left in injury time. They chipped in 3 scores. So they did. Their big players stepped up. They showed their quality in that short spell. Mm. And there were spells during the game we've seen it as well, but we didn't see it in long periods. Mm-hmm. But they showed that quality. And what they actually did was, right, let's go running at Dunlow. Kieran Muir went running at them. Shane O'Donnell went running at them. And then they chipped in with those 3 scores. They showed their quality at the end, and that got them through it. But that situation, Greg, could have went either way.
Yeah.
That could have lifted Dunlow, who next thing they're level, and right, we've still a couple of minutes here.
St. Union's going to feel sorry for themselves.
Yeah. So that they had to show a lot of character. And that was probably the most impressive thing about the group. They showed character when their back was put to the wall by an officiating decision. Now, I haven't seen a replay of it, and Ryan Walsh could be 100% correct as to what went on. So, and we have to give him the benefit of the doubt, because he has a job to do.
We don't have VAR. At the end of the day, he made a call in that moment. And you know what? Even if it was not necessarily the right call, he doesn't have VAR. He doesn't have 50 cameras and linesmen and what have you. You have to make that shout at that time. And there would be as much stink about it if there was something that was overlooked. Over the course of the season, you win some, you lose some. And he's an amateur guy running around.
Thankfully, the game hasn't been defined by that decision.
Exactly. And that's,
okay, it's not,
and
been
that's a credit to St Union's, because obviously Dunlow then at that point had the right to have their tail in the air.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not hard done by. So St Union's had to go out and win that, which does negate that decision actually completely, really.
Yeah. So they showed their quality in those closing minutes. Mm. So they
in terms of the quality of football, Brendan would, you know.
Brendan's very vocal on it.
Yeah.
And I'll call it too. The quality of football in the Donegal Senior Championship hasn't been great this year.
So what about the final? I mean, obviously the occasion will lift some of the football, if you know what I mean.
What was it? 113 to 110. Not a bad scoreline. It wasn't a 6-5 or a 7-6.
I think Dunlow scored 6. Was it four or six points 60 years ago? So they increased on that.
Listen, that's the general feeling is the standard of football in the senior championship isn't great at the moment, and it's not great probably from an entertaining perspective. Maybe these new rules that are coming in that's going to be implemented, because it seems to be that the managers are all preparing for this, and these will come in when the special congress is held next month in November. We'll get a look at it this week with the winter provincials. There's 7 or 8 rules there. 7 rules, I think it is, but then there's officiating rules related to cards, and it's all brought into one core. These rules have been brought into one core. So
it'll be interesting to see how Unions play in Ulster. Obviously, it depends on the opposition, but do they get the shackles off and be able to play more?
That might be the case. Listen, they've won Donegal. They've got it for the first time since 2021. They've won more senior titles now than any other team. So maybe the shackles are off. Let's go to Ulster, see how it goes. As I said earlier, I think St. Jude's haven't hit their peak yet, their ceiling. Maybe that will come in Ulster, because they've got a very, very talented pool of players. Mm-hmm. They've got a serious quality player, so they have. And St. Union's always have had that. But it's up to Brendan and Barry Meehan to get these boys kicking on now in Ulster, because you win Donegal, you're seen as challengers. Like, Niamh Connell ran the All-Ireland champions Glen to just a single point last year in the semi-final. And St. Union's disposed of Niamh Connell. So if you want to look at it from that perspective, yes, it is a new season.
They're out there representing Donegal football. They're the best out of the county. Let's see how our best compares to other counties' best. So, right, listen.
And 2 out of 3 wasn't bad for St. Union's, if you use the meatloaf saw.
They
were in 3 finals at the weekend and they won 2. They won the C title on Friday night.
Maybe we can.
No, don't sing. Don't even go there.
You'd swear I was out celebrating with them last night. I wasn't.
I would say a few of them can sing a lot better than you.
I hope they could. Right, okay. So other things that happened.
Congratulations to Gidor. They won the Senior B, by the way.
Brilliant. Great stuff for
them. They beat Unions in that first game yesterday.
That was the one that
got away. They could have had a... They could have the triple crown, yeah. The hat trick. But
Donegal Derry. Now, do you know this is the amazing thing? You think a season's just drawn to an end, or the curtain start to come down, or whatever. And next thing you know, boom, we get a draw for next year's championship: Donegal versus Derry.
Yeah, and the hours after it, Carl Lacey's been linked with the Derry job.
That's what I was going to say. How does that factor in sort of the recruitment process? Knowing,
I would say it has to have a factor on it.
Yeah.
It has to have a factor where you're going to go in and take a job in a county, and your first game in the championship is away from home against the Ulster champions, led by a certain Jim McGuinness. So it's bound to be a factor in it, of course. But what a game! What a game to start!
If there's a potential massive story there as well.
Oh, there's a huge story in it.
There's always a good story.
But what a game to start the championship. It was being teed up last year as the big game of the championship at the quarterfinal stage. And look what Donegal went in to do to Derry in their backyard. Derry will be coming looking to make up for that. That group of players, obviously looking to come to Balbuffet. But Jim and that group will be rubbing their hands, and they will be very much looking forward to Derry coming. Now, at what space Derry will be in by that stage of the year, who will be the manager, we don't know. Carl Lacey was linked with it. He laughed it all off yesterday. So
that's
he did.
What you do,
like Kilcoo won another down title.
Yeah.
So Kilcoo's going into Ulster. I think they're playing the Cavan champions first. So is there a Kilcoo Glen Mahara game on the horizon in the championship? Glen are all Ireland champions. If Kilcoo was to beat them, there would be a feeling. There's always a feeling in that down club that, right, we should be there thereabouts come All-Ireland final day in Croke Park. They're good enough for it. And if that's the route that Kilcoo's going to go with Carl Lacey, even though Carl has laughed this off, as you say, some might do it, I can't see Carl Lacey taking the Derry job.
Fascinating.
He says there's no meat to it. Meat to it.
Well,
so
that doesn't mean it's not true.
Yeah.
And just one other sporting thing, the rally on at the weekend, but from what I heard, huge success. It's always so busy in this county, isn't it?
It was a busy weekend. Yeah. I'm tired today. It was a great rally. Well done, John Crumlish and all his team. It was a fantastic rally based on the outskirts of Letterkenny. HQ was in the orchard, and it was a good weekend. Everybody got home safe and sound. There wasn't too many holdups. There was a top quality field there. Congratulations to Callum Devine and Noel O'Sullivan. They won the International in June. They've now won the Harvest. Callum's actually won the Harvest 4 years on the bounce. The last four times it's been won. Young Derry man. He's not really young anymore. He used to be like babyface Callum.
We grow up with a lot of these people, and you don't realise that everyone's getting a little bit older.
Yeah, so,
What was I going to say to you? Do we know where the Harvest Rally is next year? No.
No.
We'll not know
that until the start of the year. It moves around. But Letterkenny was a great location for it. So it is. But no, it will be somewhere else in the county next year.
Yeah, because there was a lot of excitement down in Donegal. It was around the old stages around Loch Esk, I think.
Yeah.
That must be, I don't know how long ago that is, but anyway. Mm-hmm. All right, listen, Oisín, as always, thanks very much. Now,
you better plug the DL debate minus Brendan Devaney tonight. I give him the night off.
Did you?
I did. He didn't even request it. I suggested to him, you'll probably.
He come in and he had to look at the camera the whole way through. Who's doing it? Are you doing it?
Porrick Holford will be in studio. Porrick's sort of been his right hand man for club championship.
Of course he has.
Yeah. So Porrick's in. Who else do we have in? John Gilday.
Yep.
Brendan Kilcoyne. John Gilday of the Neath Connacht Club. Brendan Kilcoyne of the St. Eunan's Club. He's four titles with St. Eunan's, three as a player.
There might be a Zoom appearance from Brendan at any point. Or
no, Brendan will be in the studio.
Brendan Devaney.
Brendan Devaney. Sorry, I'm getting mixed up with the Brendans. I don't know.
Hey, come here.
Live from Blake's Bar.
Yeah, exactly.
There's somebody else in as well. Who else? Ryan Ferry, Donegal News. Ryan's been a regular contributor as well.
And I just want to mention break our down website that kind of as well, fan. Too, because a lot of stuff is on air. But in terms of, you know, the rally, the GEA, go to the website highlandradio.com. There's a sports section there. It's all free for you. You get reaction interviews right as they, you know, some of the access that you have, brilliant post-match reaction and everything yesterday, Oisín. And go to the website. It's a fantastic resource, highlandradio.com, in the sports section. There's big games upcoming for Finn Harpson against in-form opponents and everything else as well. All right,
Harps are out tonight against Wexford. It's the last week of the season. They are, I think the playoffs just might be a wee bit too far reached now for Harps. They needed to win last weekend. It didn't happen. Now they got a draw. Oh, so yeah. It's a draw on the road, but they needed to win to sort of keep pace, because I just think it's maybe a wee bit of a ask. But these sides ahead of them drop points now.
You never know, but you have to put yourself in the position to you have to put yourself in the position to avail of any slip ups. Yeah. Teams ahead of you, mate.
Jeremy Doherty will have updates tonight in Highland from the 7:45 kickoff.
Good stuff. Thanks very much for that. All right, Sheen, back after the break. Joe Daly is co-owner of Key West Restaurant in Donegal, and we're speaking ahead of a hospitality sector day of action on Tuesday. And we'll get to that in a moment, Joe. But good morning to you in the first instance. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Greg, and thanks for having me. I know there's a lot of issues going on in the world and the country at the moment, but I really appreciate you taking the time to take
it. But this is an important issue, because this is businesses, this is people's livelihood, this is employment, this is people paying their mortgages. It's a really important issue, because it's the trickle-down effect of a closure. And unfortunately, Joe, we are seeing closures all of the time. And the commonality seems to be the cost of doing businesses. You know, long-established businesses that you would think, surely they can't. I'm not referencing any specifics here, Joe, but do you know what I mean? Okay. They're too big to fail, or they're too small and efficient to fail, but they are making these decisions, and it all seems to come down to the cost of doing business.
Absolutely, Greg. You know, if you think back, we've been in the storms really since 2007, since the recession kicked in. And we've been, most food and drink businesses, we have been in the storm since 2007. We weathered the recession. We worked our butts off to get through that. Came out of that in kind of 2014, 2015. Started to kind of make a bit of ground. And next thing, bang, in 2020, we were closed because of the pandemic. You know, 54 weeks of not being able to trade, 54 weeks of not being able to run your business. That was at a huge cost. And I know to say there were supports there, but really only the supports just kept a pulse of the business. So you open back up, you try and get back on your feet, and next thing you're hit with rising costs. I mean, it's horrendous, the amount of closures that's going on. And as you said, we're not going to reference any, but you had three closures last week. I heard of another one this morning, not in Donegal, but it's happening at such an alarming rate, I would say you can't keep up with the statistics at the moment.
I was chatting to a business owner recently who said that their restaurant wouldn't be viable if they didn't have rooms associated with it. In fact, it was Nevin Maguire.
That's true.
He says that business would not be sustainable without the bedrooms. And a lot of hotels have that advantage where they can loosen the swings and the gains and the roundabouts, but restaurants don't. They're food-led, and I know this protest taking place on Tuesday, or demonstration, and we'll talk about that, but the opportunity has been missed now. We just had a budget whereby potentially things could have been thought in a different way, whereby struggling food-led businesses could have been supported, but not necessarily support the big hotels that are gouging down in Dublin. There were solutions, but they weren't availed of. So what real impact can this protest in Dublin have, or this rally have in Dublin, march and rally have in Dublin, so soon after a budget where it seemed you were close, but it wasn't gotten over the line?
Well, I hope it makes them sit up and take notice that people are taking times out of their days, in fact, closing their businesses tomorrow to head up to Dublin to say, listen, we are in a crisis and we need help. And I mean, if we don't do something, what's going to happen? You're going to face more and more closures. Tourism is going to be wrecked in Ireland, because even in Donegal alone, we are, you know, we're a rural location, so we depend an awful lot on tourists to come into our county, you know, to kind of see what we have and all that kind of thing. And food culture and food tourism is massive, especially in a rural area. And if we're wiping out small businesses, what are we going to be offering tourists in 5 years' time? Are we going to be offering them Starbucks, Costa Coffees, McDonald's? Because if all these indigenous little restaurants and cafes are gone, what's going to be left? The multinationals that can afford to take on the hit of these rising costs. Is that what the countryside is going to look like in 5 years' time? Is that what we want? I mean, we're working hard to provide a circular economy here in Donegal. We're working, you know, through the Food Coast Donegal. So that's an initiative where you're trying to promote small drink producers and food producers, so that us as restaurants and bars, we will buy their produce and promote it. So if we go, say if even 20% of restaurants, cafes, pubs are gone mm-hmm. within 5 years. I don't know the stats. Where is that going?
But you see, the thing about it, Joe, is I had these conversations with vintners, you know, 10, 15 years ago. And over the course of that time, we saw massive pub closures, a huge percentage, greater than the percentage you've just quoted, and it was allowed to happen. Are the powers that be sitting in Dublin and saying, look, maybe this sector needs a consolidation? You know, maybe each town needs one or two good viable restaurants. Maybe six or seven is too many. Why should we support them if the market's not there for them all to be profitable? Because I believe that's a little bit what happened to the pub trade. I think it was allowed to consolidate.
Well, if that happens, then you're going to reduce competitiveness.
I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying, I wonder, is that what the plan is?
That's a mentality. I don't know, Greg, to be honest. But you think of all the people that are employed in tourism, you know, between drinks, between the hospitality and the pubs and stuff like that. What's going to happen there? I mean, look in Donegal Town, we have five hotels feeding into the town, which is great for Donegal Town. And you have loads of fantastic restaurants. People come to Donegal Town because there is such an offering. Mm. So if you reduce that down to two, yeah, or say three, you're going to reduce the competitiveness of, like, we are a very competitive market, we're trying to keep a great food offering there for the public. But if you reduce that down, the competitiveness, well then, can prices go up? I just don't know, but we are in crisis at the moment.
Yeah. Shocking. So there is an assembly tomorrow, 1 p.m. at Pepper Canister Church, Mount Street, Upper Dublin, yeah. 2. March and rally 2 to 4 p.m. outside Leinster House, Kildare Street. Obviously, the budget has passed now. See, there's one thing I wanted to mention to you too. I understand that government ministers will come on and quite rightly say, look, we're not doing the 9%, but we're putting other supports in place, other business supports, and a lot of them are administered through the council. And I couldn't help but notice in the small print, because I have a tendency to read this stuff, that you have to be fully rate compliant, fully up to date with everything before you can avail of some of these business supports. And yet the very businesses that need the support are probably businesses like I spoke to last week, where they have fallen behind, where they're in payment plans with the council and they are reducing what they might owe the council. But that's the very business that might need a business support that can't actually apply for it. So it's actually really the viable businesses that can meet all of their costs that can avail of these supports. That doesn't make a great deal of sense.
No, it doesn't. And you're 100% correct. You have to be rate compliant. And the other thing is, to avail of these grants, you have to spend the money first. So businesses don't have the money to spend. I mean, Peter Burke mentioned there last Monday on up from the Katie Hannon, you know, about these grants that are available, you know, energy efficient, blah, blah, blah. But you have to spend the 10 grand first before you can get it. Mm. So, I mean, businesses don't have that mm-hmm. money. Mm-hmm. They don't have that. So some of these supports aren't realistic. They're not there.
But there are those with a decent cash flow that can, and it bolsters them, and fair play to them, but it just excludes those that couldn't. I put it to Nevin Maguire last week, and I'll put it to you too. My fear is that a lot of people were holding out to see what the budget might hold, and I think they're sitting down now heading into a winter where the tourism season obviously is reducing and what have you, and they're looking at the figures, they're looking at the menu, they look at what they may need to charge to keep their head above water. And over the next couple of weeks, they might say, do you know what, there's no point being a busy fool. We can't do that. Yeah. And I'm just concerned that some business owners, particularly in this area we're talking of, are going to make that tough call this month.
Well, they have to look at the numbers. I mean, there was a soft summer this year. You know, I won't say it was a busy summer. It was a soft enough summer. So if you can't gain the fat in those 4 weeks, and that's what summer is, it's really only 4 weeks, the last 2 weeks in July, the first 2 weeks in August. If you can't make the money there in those 4 weeks to get you through the winter, you're cooked. And if all you can see is costs going up, costs going up, costs going up, you're going to have to make that call. I mean, a simple thing like bottle Coke. In 2021, a case of Coke was $11.59. Now it's up to $15.95. So it's 37.5% of an increase. And that's across the board. From the moment you open your door, to you turn on your light, to you put on your music, all those costs have gone up. So they have to make the call. is it worth it? Yeah. Is it worth it? Can I get through the winter? So
we also have to factor into some government initiatives, which sounds fantastic, right? Whereby, and we need, you know, an increase in the minimum wage, alter enrolment into the pension. These are things that the government can announce effectively for free at the time of a budget. But it is the industry. Now, listen, some people would say the wages aren't excellent in tourism, in the tourism industry. And I get that and I respect that, right? But what businesses are more likely to have to shoulder the cost of a minimum wage increase? What businesses are most likely not to have staff that are on pensions? It's not the big multinationals that operate and employ fantastically around you in Donegal Town there. It's or the town I'm sitting in here in Letterkenny, for an example. It is low margin businesses, seasonal businesses effectively. And that, again, as I say, that family sitting down to decide if they're going to open this winter and even into next year, those are the straws that can break the camel's back.
Absolutely. I mean, the state-induced costs, you know, which includes the increase in the minimum pay, the extra bank holiday, which is meant to be coming, the higher pay aside, the extra sick days, they're going to add, I think, 6.6% to the payroll. So, I mean, it's
which
so
is the biggest
kind
expense
of,
in business, is it not?
Which is the biggest expense in business, yeah. And, I mean, I think Governor Gabrielle McAlouf back in January warned the government that fast rising labour costs were going to become a main driver of inflation. So inflation affects us all. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, and we want people to have a good wage and we want people to want to come to work and enjoy it. But you could, there's only so much in the basket. There's only so much you can do. And I mean, if the minimum wage goes up, everybody's goes up. All across the organisation, it goes up. And that's part of the problem too. Yeah.
All right then, just in a nutshell, the hospitality sector day of action tomorrow, what are the key calls on government? I mean, at this point, do you want restaurants and the food industry to be decoupled from hotels? It seems an uneasy bedfellows at this point. They're two completely different businesses, and hotels with restaurants can compete with restaurants. So this whole connection between the two industries, to me, doesn't seem to serve restaurants very well. So decouple hotels from restaurants. What else in terms of initiatives? I mean, by the way, of course, not in terms of physical presence. What else would help businesses survive?
Put in support that actually helps the businesses. Like as you said, you know, earlier, I mean, offering these grants, you know, to kind of, you know, reduce your carbon footprint, to make yourself greener and leaner and cleaner, that's okay if you have the money to spend in the first place. You know, that's one thing. And the other thing, decoupling the hotels, absolutely, because it can be easy done because they've already separated out food and drink and also, you know, they VAT rate on cold takeaway food. So there's no reason why I can't see how they can uncouple us from hotels. We don't have the same buying power, and we don't have the same spending power, and we don't have the same revenue stream, you know, as we have from the rooms. So I would just love to see some actual realistic packages put in place, certainly reduce the VAT, to try and help businesses be
sustainable.
And
I think pubs without food also perhaps would like to be included in that, because
absolutely,
I think there is
they're struggling too.
Yeah, I think people are sometimes misinformed in thinking that when we talk about the VAT rate, that a pub gets that benefit. It doesn't. It's food led or food serving places. All right, Joe, listen, thanks for that. Safe journey down
thanks,
to Dublin
Greg,
tomorrow.
Appreciate it.
Take care of yourself. That's they're assembling at 1 p.m. at Pepper Canister. Why am I saying Canister? Pepper Canister Church, Mount Street, Upper Dublin 2. It's a march and rally, 2 to 4 p.m. Outside Leinster House on Kildare Street. Okay, you're commenting on that. You're commenting on the situation with Sinn Féin. You're commenting on the CDNT, and you're commenting on the situation in the Middle East. I have loads of comments. I'll get through them, as many as I can, of course, between now and 12 noon. Some of your comments now. I think the people are finally starting to see that the government civil servants do not care about the small businesses or working middle class. They just don't care. They only pander to the multinationals and the big corporations and the EU. But we keep voting them back in. We need a government that actually listens to small businesses, the ordinary person living and working in Ireland, not those who come in and avail of all the grants and subsidies and then leave. Another here. Hi, Greg. My wife is working in a restaurant for the last 25 years, and she said that this is the first time it's been as quiet in all of her years. I can go back three or four years in the show talking about prices in pubs and restaurants, and I kept using this phrase called tipping point. And what I meant by that, it's not the Ben Shepherd afternoon television show. What I meant, there comes a point where it's too expensive to go out. So even if you have a few quid, that you look, you go out and you see the bill at the end of it and you go, that's just too much. That we can't justify that expense. And I believe for many, we're over that tipping point. In Dublin, over the tipping point, turned around, went over it again and set it on fire at the city restaurant. Greg, €135 for two steaks. They didn't do chips. No pepper sauce and four glasses of wine. Needless to say, we won't be back. Now, I would like to have met the cows and had a sit down with them for that kind of money. €135 for two steaks. Who would be back? And no trimmings, as they say. A government wants to get rid of middle classes. They only want the costs, etc., says a caller. Hi, Greg. I can't understand why St Unions are cribbing about the ref decisions. Sure, Unions in the semis got handy soft scoreable frees and the winning point was wide in the same game. I'm not privy to your experience at the semis. But as I said earlier on, you know, you gain on the swings and you lose on the roundabouts and vice versa. On the issue of Sinn Féin, Michelle O'Neill uses reading glasses, but it's a huge ask for the public to believe that she never saw Mr. McMonagall in front of her taking pics of her at the Heart Foundation function in Belfast. Another, I'm listening to Greg and Padraig McLaughlin is quite right. You have to go through all channels of complaints before taking this to guards. As in any company, all parties have to be treated fairly, and as anyone knows, it should be confidential to both parties involved. I was listening to Porg, I was thinking if there was an internal discipline matter in an organisation and there was any suggestion of criminality, there's not a subsection below the guards. It should go straight to the guards, I think, to protect all parties involved, be it the accused or the accuser. Like, why was it a Garda matter this weekend or last week and not in July? That's just the question that people are asking. And Sinn Féin have to answer that, and Porrig did it. Would Porrig agree that with the seriousness of allegations against children within Sinn Féin, should the ISPCA be notified to conduct an audit? He answered that and said, yes, that those procedures are in place. A caller says, strange, Sinn Féin didn't inform the Gardaí until yesterday morning, 3 months after the complaint was made. Then again, why inform the Gardaí of a non-criminal complaint as described by Sinn Féin? And that still is a little bit uncertain to me. Does Porrig think we really believe that he doesn't know what the complaint is about? Show us some respect. Yes, you do. Whether you can talk about it, that is different. A caller says, yet another Sinn Féin crisis to add to the party's slide in the polls. Unfortunately, trying to be everything to everyone hasn't worked out. Sadly, this once proud Republican Party is no more than a mascot for the Irish establishment who've ditched dearly held principles to appease those who would drop them like a lead balloon while abandoning people who put them in positions of power. I wonder what excuses Mary Lou and followers will come up after their annihilation at the coming general election. Now, I think Mary Lou McDonald was due to visit Donegal today. I'm not sure if it's been deferred or what have you, but she's not up in the county and therefore we were due to have an interview. Weren't able to get that today, but Porrig McLaughlin, whilst the local TD, is a very senior member of Sinn Féin. Back to the HSE now. Is this delay in hiring again down to lazy, inept middle management in the HSE? Who's in charge? Who makes decisions? Who's ultimately responsible? We need to get responsibility now. Another, recruitment in the HSE is a shambles. I applied for a non-medical position in July 23, interviewed for the position in December 23 and was placed third on a panel. Never heard another thing about the job. However, the vacancies are being filled with agency staff. Do they expect us to believe this is different money they're paying the agency staff with? Hi, Greg. The respite services for people with learning disabilities in this county is nearly non-existent. We keep being told it's staffing issues. No other county in the country would put up with this. Families are at breaking point, needing a break. Can you imagine giving someone 24 hours care every single day with no break? This is unfair and unacceptable. I am begging through this post for some of our ministers to step up and help. And I will try and get contact and access to ministers to ask these questions directly and to get answers on the record. Hi, Greg. No respite in Stranraer either. Used to be family support workers in Donegal who took our children for a few hours each week to give parents a break. Out of the 20 staff, there's only one left in Donegal. People have left and haven't been replaced. Obviously, they're gradually closing this service too. Hi, folks. In relation to the guys on with CDNT, NEPS is also in a mess. A lot of schools in Donegal with no NEPS rep assigned full-time, including my own little autistic boys' school. We had a review with NEPS earlier in this year and still no follow-up since, as no rep assigned to the school and staff shortages. Apparently, schools are struggling. No one wants to help them. So what is the story? Why are these posts vacant? Why are there panels that aren't being drawn down from? What's going on? Again, I'm asking a question I hope to get an answer. They go on to say NEPS service is also understaffed. In every school should have a NEPS representative. 20 or more schools in Donegal do not have a NEPS rep. Norma Foley's office said that there is a recruitment drive underway for NEPS. Again, if you're affected by that or if you're a school affected by that, the more information we get, the more we can platform it. Really, it's how we get results here. I agree 100% with the comment you just read from the Ukrainian living here in Ireland regarding Zelensky and the recruitment of young Ukrainians into the army. What for? To be slaughtered, for sure, at this rate, and killing will go on till there's no one left. Greg, you said everyone's opinion has to be aired and you are supposed to listen. That is total nonsense with regard to Israel and the USA. These countries are led by old men that a lot of time don't even know where they are, yet you are prepared to listen to them when they are killing and slaughtering innocent people, when they should be spending their time arranging their funeral, they say. I don't know what part of what I said is you seem to think that I'm pro-Israel, pro-USA. I didn't really feel I gave that impression, but as I said, every opinion's important. The war in Israel will continue as Harris and Biden both support the war. Israel is pumping the US full of money, so the war will continue. The world is ruled by money. We saw how the owner of Harrods was able to sexually abuse hundreds of women because he had enough money to cover it up. Yeah, that's a big story, that one. What is our soldiers doing out their so-called peacemakers? They have no right out there getting involved with Israeli child killers, frames a listener. Well said, Greg, about covering the Middle East situation. You do plenty of coverage on the defective block issue, and I'm thankful of this as an affected homeowner. But as you said, it would not be right not to cover this situation. Thank you for doing what you do and the professional way that you do it. Thanks so much for the kind words. I appreciate it. I know a lot of the people involved in defective concrete. I've spoke to them. I won't go into the nitty-gritty, but trust me, I understand what's going on. And I know that they are also very caring of other things that are happening in the world and wouldn't mind us in any way, shape or form giving a platform to that. So thank you so much for your comments. I'm going to be talking to Bernie next. Bernie, sorry for holding you. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thanks so much for chatting to us. Great. All right, yours is a strange story, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll let you tell it as you sent it in to us, Bernie.
This morning I got up and there was three letters in my letterbox for myself and two members of my family from Donegal County Council, mm-hmm. which I wouldn't have much dealings with Donegal County Council. I thought it was a bit funny, but I opened it up anyhow and Mayan said, important notification of intention to delete from the register of electors Donegal. We refer to the receipt of the return polling card marked unknown at this address and our previous letters to you in relation to your entry on the register. It is noted that of the date of this letter, we have no confirmation you are still resident at the above address or have changed. If we don't receive confirmation of your residence at the above address, within 14 days, your details will be deleted from the register of electors in Donegal. What you need to do to fulfil the requirement, you have to complete an ERF1 form from www.checkregister.ie and you can update your details on this website. Mm-hmm. Completed hard copy of this form must be returned to the franchise section in Donegal. And if you have any inquiries, please email the same website. Well, for a start, I'm always 80 years of age. I know what a computer is, but I know very little about it. So, I mean, I'm supposed to be able to download forms.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Did you recently move home? Let's not get ahead of us of the story. Did you recently move home?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm living here for 53 years.
Well, then you mustn't have voted in any elections, surely.
I have voted, surely.
Did you vote in the last election?
I did vote in the last election, but I didn't get a polling card to the house And when I only went down for a walk with my husband when he was boating down to the school, and two ladies up there said to me, you're next. And I said, but I haven't have a voting card. And they said, but I haven't got one. So they asked, whatever it was, a man who was in charge there, they asked him, and they said, is that who she is? Is that who Bernie is? And they said, yeah, that's her surely. So...
Away you went. So you were on the register. So this is the crazy thing here. Sorry, Bernie. We'll get to the computers in a minute, right? But they said that they believe that you're not at that address anymore. But they sent a letter to you, that address, saying they believed you're not at the address.
Yeah.
So if they believed you're not at the address, why are they sending you a letter to that address saying they're taking you off the register?
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Like, and it's not even that, but two of my children as well. And I opened one of their letters, and it's the exact same letter.
Wow.
So obviously myself and two of my family don't live here any longer.
And through no fault of your own then, you're being asked to go to a computer, download a form, sign that form, send it on, all this so you can retain the right to vote. Yet you've lived in this house for 53 years. And you voted even in the most recent council elections. I can understand them maybe trying to tidy up the voting register, but there's something seriously amiss here, Bernie.
Yeah. I just can't understand it. I mean, if it was only one of us, like, but three of us.
Yeah. Wow.
They were going to be taken off the register.
Obviously, that would bother you. I mean, it's, you know, like... They should know you voted in the last election, at the very least. It is your address because they sent... Where are they... If they can get a letter to you saying that the poll card came back undelivered, there's a problem there, isn't there? Because if this letter gets through to you, surely the polling card would have got through.
And it said, according to this, like, really, our previous letters to you, they've obviously sent letters to me about it.
In that letter, did they say that you returned the polling cards with not at this address written on it?
They said, we refer to the receipt of the returned polling card marked unknown at this address.
So that could have been a visiting post person or something.
Right,
listen, I'm sure you're looking into this. We're on your behalf going to check into this as well, if that's okay with you. I'm sure you've been speaking to Caroline, but it's an odd one. And, you know, it would make you wonder. All right, it's thrown up more questions than answers, Bernie. But listen, thanks so much for helping us spread the word.
Okay, thanks
God
very much.
God bless you and love to all the family. Okay, anyone else had that experience? Have you received a letter to the address that apparently you don't live at saying that you don't live there, so we're going to take you off the register, but you get the letter? My head's sore. I'm too hungry to try and work that out. I really am. It's something seriously amiss. Well said, Greg, about... thanks for that. There are winners in war, sadly. Those with shares in arms, medical supplies, fuel, and then the rebuild afterwards. That's true. They say there's no winners in war, but there are. You're really good point, actually. Another, Greg, there are big winners in war, sadly, but it's not the two countries that are fighting. It's the bankers that are funding both sides. It's the corporations that are making weapons, bullets, bombs, tanks, etc. So, yes, there are some big winners. Could you work in an arms factory, do you know, where you produce these missiles that politicians come up with for the photo op to be signed? Could you work in a place like that? Morally, I would struggle. I wouldn't, actually. Hey, listen, thanks so much for your company this Monday. John Breslin is coming up after 12 around the Northwest, as always. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9. Don't forget, if you're listening to the podcast or you're listening to the replay overnight, we really appreciate your support. And if you want to comment, email comments@highlandradio.com. Thanks, everyone. Take care of yourselves. Chat to you tomorrow.